Carol Kennedy was a 53-year-old divorcee. She was a mother of two children. She was an artist. She was an educator. She lives in a somewhat secluded area outside of town, a lot of open land.
I just loved Carol immediately. We were very good friends. She was an absolutely beautiful, pure, loving person.
July 2nd of 2008, Carol Kennedy was murdered in that house. This all starts that Carol Kennedy's on a phone call with her mother. Next thing you know, the mother hears her say, "Oh no." And all of a sudden, the call is disconnected.
Sheriff's Office, Maria, how can I help you?
Mother suspects something's not correct, and she calls 911.
I was on the phone with my daughter, and she screamed and said, "Oh no, and the phone's gone dead. Can you go check?"
And next thing you know, the police arrive. Somebody looks through the window and sees a dead body on the floor, sees blood all over the place. The person who killed her was very upset with her. There's no reason to whack her 7-8 times over the head with a club. It was a horrific crime scene.
We knew very little other than the fact that she had been clearly beaten to death.
It's horrible, just horrible. I mean, I just can't believe a person would be so cruel.
My name is Joseph Moira. I'm a private investigator. I was hired by 48 Hours to look into this case. This was a passion crime. This was clearly somebody who knew her, and therefore the suspects are very limited.
And to all a good night.
My brother Steve and Carol were together for about 30 years. They were just crazy in love for each other. Steve was a very successful financial advisor. He had just been promoted to the senior vice president at UBS. So he had a very strong position and a job that he loved.
I always had a sense they were both deeply in love with each other and that the marriage had become toxic.
Stephen the Mocker puts himself approximately a mile and a half from this exact location the night of the murder. He claims that he went for a bike ride. So obviously, being the ex-husband and putting himself in the area, he becomes a suspect immediately.
I want to be cooperative.
Okay.
And I'm hoping, like I said, I do my best to rule people out.
He's the only person that hated her. She was just too good. No one else could do that to her.
They already don't believe him. They didn't buy his initial story. They don't buy the alibi of riding a bicycle. They're saying, "Oh, we got our guy."
Steve couldn't do this to anyone. Certainly not to Carol, not to the mother of his children.
From the defense point of view, the biggest aspect of reasonable doubt in this case is the lack of physical evidence. There was none on his bike. There was none in his car. There was none in his house. There was none in his clothing. There should have been something.
As an American, you're entitled to, you're innocent until proven guilty. Boy, we found out that that wasn't true.
If you decide that you're going to arrest Steve the Mocker for the murder of his wife without any physical evidence whatsoever, you better have a very strong circumstantial case.
They cannot put Steve inside that murder scene.
So there's nothing we're gonna find that's gonna tie you there at all? No, I wasn't there. Okay. I wouldn't do that.
Okay.
What we do know is the DNA under Carol Kennedy's left fingernails is a complete profile, and it's not Stephen DeMocker.
I'm Maureen Maher, tonight on 48 Hours.
End of the trail.
I think it was really extremely shocking. You just don't expect something like that to happen here.
The murder of 53-year-old Carol Kennedy had a devastating impact on her friend and neighbor, Jan Wheeler.
I didn't know anything about it until the next morning, and there was the yellow tape across. So I stopped. And I said, "Hey, my good friend lives there. is everything okay? And they said, no, it's not. And they said, she's dead.
Carol had been a teacher and a therapist, working with addicts at a local women's clinic. But she was mostly known around town as an artist, a printmaker.
Printmaking is a fine art form that brings the disciplines of drawing, painting, graphic arts, all into one arena.
She spent hours in this studio working alongside fellow artists like Barb Wills.
To me, her artwork gave her her voice. Nobody was judging her, nobody was hurting her.
The bitterness of her divorce with Steve could be clearly seen in her work, according to another friend, Betsy Pettit.
And I think for her, it definitely showed, especially the colors. They were much darker, much moodier.
He was a fun-loving person. He wanted to have fun, and you wanted to be around him.
Steve is the oldest of nine children.
He taught me how to canoe and swim and ride a bike, and he was just the best big brother you could ask for.
He's a very gentle, non-violent guy.
Which is why his family was so shocked when police claimed they had a strong circumstantial case and arrested him in October of 2008. 3 months after Carol's murder.
Carol Kennedy's body was discovered laying in a pool of her own blood.
At DeMocker's trial, the horror of the crime was hard for some to reconcile with a successful stockbroker sitting at the defense table.
When I met him, he was clearly in shock, clearly was trying to hold his family together.
Rich Robertson is an investigator for DeMocker's defense team. Robertson walked us through Carol's home.
So what do we know about Carol's activity that night? What was she doing?
Well, when Carol got off work, probably about 5:30 in the afternoon, she went to the store, bought some salad, came home, and went for a run.
Robertson saw the gruesome crime scene within days of the murder.
It was clearly a violent crime scene. Just the blood spatter on the wall, on the desk, it was just all over. I mean, it was all the way to the other wall.
How do you have this much blood and there's no bloody footprint, no bloody fingerprints or handprints anywhere?
Right.
I mean, it's like a ghost came in.
Right.
Defense lawyer Larry Hammond insists there was no record of any violence throughout the DeMocker's marriage.
Someone might say, well, a great theme here is that this was a very contentious divorce, which causes most of us to think, well, it must have been violent. There must have been threats. There must have been protective orders.
And was there any of that?
No.
Was
no.
there ever any
Not at all.
threat
None.
Of violence anywhere?
No.
I never saw him act violently. He's very controlled.
Even DeMocker's girlfriend at the time of the murder, Renee Girard, says that he often spoke fondly of his ex-wife.
He shared a lot about his marriage, and he shared it in many stories that were heartwarming and joyful, and as something he regretted losing.
But Carol's friend Jan says, in truth, Steve was angry about the divorce.
Oh, he was furious. He was absolutely furious that she would have the nerve to do anything against him because she never had.
But clearly, Carol had finally had enough. Enough of a husband who, by all accounts, had become a serial philanderer.
Towards the end, she was like, you know, I think I've counted 17 affairs he's had. The first one that she was aware of was her midwife and he were sleeping together while she was pregnant.
And so why would she stay with him then?
She loved him. He's just very charming. You know, he will tell a woman exactly what she wants to hear.
He could be a bad guy from a morality standpoint, if you will, but that doesn't reflect a motive to kill Carol.
Do you think you can make Stephen look like a likable guy to the jury?
What you may think about him as a good guy or a bad guy have nothing to do with this case.
Caught in the middle are the couple's two daughters who are called to testify. They have lost a mother, but believe in their father's innocence.
It was the first time the full family had been together in a while, and it was after the divorce had been finalized, and it was actually very pleasant.
Katie tells the court about the last time she saw her mother, as the family gathered at the airport to see her off on a trip abroad 4 days before the murder.
It was very emotional. There was just nothing but expressions of love and gratitude and happiness. And I looked back and my dad had his arm around my mom and my mom had her arm around my sister, and they were all waving to me. So that was the last memory I have of my mother.
And Charlotte talked about the last text she and her mother exchanged on the day her mother died.
I had just gotten a new job, and she was asking me how my training was.
Do you remember what the last text message you got back from your mother was?
I do. I love you in all capitals.
Have they been supportive of Stephen?
Oh, incredibly supportive. Unanimously supportive.
Over the last 23 months since your mother died, has your relationship with your father changed in any particular way?
It's difficult to stay as close when you can't hug your dad, but we've remained as close as possible.
The jury would have to decide if the man described as a loving father could have killed the mother of his children. Defense attorney John Sears tells the court the state has no case.
It's always the husband. If it's not him, who else is it? They jump to that conclusion.
Is there any physical evidence, DNA, blood, hair fibers, anything that matches Stephen DeMocker?
There's no DNA of Steve DeMocker anywhere in that house.
But there is DNA under Carol's fingernails that belongs to someone else, a man whose identity remains a mystery.
If he was the attacker, should have been his DNA, and it was not.
Still, Joe Butner of the Yavapai County Attorney's Office is emphatic that DeMocker was the only one who had the means, the motive, and the opportunity to kill Carol.
The evidence will show that while Mr. DeMocker was on his bike ride, his cell phone was off.
By the way, his phone is dead. Battery's dead. Okay? All of a sudden, he's out of the grid. Most people say you go out of the grid. There's a reason why you're out of the grid.
It's America's 250th birthday, and I'm going to shop the furniture America's waited 250 years for at Bob's Discount Furniture. At Bob's, they've got ultra-comfy power reclining sofas with genuine leather seats, stylish dining sets with convenient lift-top storage, best-selling bedrooms with over 700 five-star reviews, and a feature-packed pop-up sleeper sofa with built-in shelving, charging, storage, and those signature Bob-opedic seats. So, stop in or shop online at Bob's Discount Furniture, where America shops for furniture.
Within miles of the serene beauty of the Arizona Red Rocks, Carol Kennedy's life had come to a violent end. And many in the town of Prescott believed her ex-husband Steve was her killer.
I think he took everything from her, including her life. Everything.
The autopsy concluded that Carol had suffered 7 major skull fractures from a blunt force object, possibly a golf club.
Someone did it, and I don't know who, if it wasn't you right now.
Investigators searched DeMocker's home immediately. They found a bag of golf clubs, but one was missing, a Big Bertha 7 wood like this one. While authorities may have strongly suspected the missing club could be the murder weapon, they were never able to find it.
Obviously, the number one suspect is the husband. But they certainly had just cause to suspect him.
Neither the prosecutor nor the sheriff has ever been willing to speak to the news media about Carol Kennedy's murder. So we asked private investigator and CBS News consultant Joe Mora to outline the case against Stephen DeMocker.
He's got some problems with his story.
Turn left on Pump Road.
One of the biggest problems? DeMonker was unreachable for 5 hours the evening Carol was murdered.
He always had a phone on and charged so that his daughters could reach him anytime, day or night.
Except that night, when according to DeMonker, his cell phone battery had died.
That becomes a very strong point for the police and certainly puts the suspicions on Steve DeMonker. On a crime, you're looking for the motive, but you're also looking, was there time to do these things? You're looking for that window.
And DeMonker himself admits he went for a bike ride on a trail near his ex-wife's home.
Now, the situation is he lives 8 miles away from here. So why that particular day he decides he's going to drive 8 miles to go bike riding?
And like I said, the proximity of where the trail is,
I know,
where you're riding.
Wish I'd chosen a different trail.
I wish you had chosen a different trail also.
And he came back with very visible scratches.
You got a lot of scratches. I was watching your legs. You got there.
His alibi, remember, is that he's out riding a bicycle and he gets a flat tire. So that means he's got to walk the bike back. So it's very possible he could have scratched himself in the trail. But his problem was things were happening at the wrong time at the wrong place.
Investigators found shoe prints and bike tracks directly behind Carol Kennedy's house that they say incriminate Steve DeMonker.
It was multiple prints in that area. It was very leafy and sticks were there, but you could tell someone had been there.
An FBI expert determined that those impressions came from a specific kind of shoe, a brand called La Sportiva.
Did you find any shoes that seemed to be comparable to the impressions that you observed in these photos from the crime scene?
Yes, I found one shoe that could have made those impressions.
And a receipt showed that DeMonker had purchased a pair back in 2006. But investigators could not find them when they searched his home.
Basically, all they really have is a footprint that may or may not look similar to some shoes that he may or may not have owned.
Prosecutors tell the jury another set of impressions found near Carol's house are from tires that have a tread just like those on DeMonker's bike.
Did you find any dissimilar characteristics between those?
No, I did not.
Now, we know it's a very common tire, so 90% of the people around here probably have the same tire. But then do 90% of the people wear the same type of shoe that left that partial print?
And perhaps most damaging, after DeMonker's arrest, investigators discovered that Carol's ex-husband had conducted some rather interesting internet searches on his computer, including how to kill someone and make it look like a suicide.
That doesn't look good.
Yeah, no, it doesn't look good. His position is he was doing research to write a novel.
His sister Sharon insists it's true.
Steve's been interested in writing for a long time. He's actually a really good writer. And he's been working on a manuscript for a long time, long before the murder. I've been doing a lot of the editing for him. He's talked with a number of us about it.
But the big question remains, why? Why would Steve DeMonker kill his ex-wife?
The divorce was settled on May 27th. The murder occurred on July 2nd. They were just resolving the last little details about that divorce settlement. Everything had been decided.
Still, the prosecution was convinced the motive was money.
After the Dow dropped 18% last week,
it was 2008 and the economy was tanking, especially in the world of finance.
Steve liked to spend money. He liked his things. He liked nice hotels. He liked first class everything.
Steve DeMonker had a mountain of expenses, and now he owed Carol $6,000 a month in alimony.
But it did become clear that he was in significant debt, what to most of us would seem insurmountable.
While his family admits that he did borrow money from them to make ends meet, they are adamant it was not a motive for murder.
He took hits, but his career was solid. Mm-hmm. He had great earning capacity, and he would have rebounded, and as did everybody else.
Still, Carol's death would be a windfall.
And was there a life insurance policy involved that he would have benefited from?
There also was a life insurance policy that he had no interest in and hasn't benefited from.
There were, in fact, two life insurance policies totaling $750,000. both payable to Steve DeMocker. But the defense claims not only is money not the motive, there is another suspect. This man. From the moment Steve DeMocker was charged with his ex-wife's murder, his family not only felt a profound loss.
It's like, okay, we lost Carol, now we lost Steve.
His parents also lived with the fear of having their son put to death.
I kept going over the moment, and I could picture a clock at 11:45, and 10:12. And 5:12, counting down, knowing now he's going down the corridor. Now they're putting him on a gurney. Now they're starting an IV that will pour poison into his system. And that was what I went to sleep with at night.
The death penalty was taken off the table before the trial began, but Steve DeMocker still faced life in prison. Adding to his family's pain was their belief that authorities missed a key suspect, Jim Knapp. Knapp was a friend of Carol's who was living in her guest house.
It was an ugly divorce.
Knapp was quick to arrive at the crime scene, and investigators recorded their conversation with him as he pointed a finger directly at Steve DeMocker.
My intuitive take, the guy comes off to me as a very sneaky, manipulative man.
And the first thing he said is, you know, she's got this crazy ex-husband, and I have a feeling it was probably him.
Jim Knapp might have had a reason to disparage Steve. Sharon DeMocker says there was a rumor around town that Jim Knapp wanted to be more than just friends with Carol.
What concerned us was that he was very enamored of Carol.
That's why DeMocker's defense team wants to know why investigators didn't take Knapp in for questioning or search his residence.
He wasn't looked at all that night. They never looked at his clothing. They never really inspected his truck.
Authorities had a good reason not to suspect Jim Knapp. Unlike Steve DeMocker, Knapp had an alibi.
They realized that Knapp's alibi was he was babysitting his son at his former wife's house.
But even if investigators had wanted to question Knapp again, they wouldn't get the chance. In a bizarre twist, Knapp was found dead 5 months after Carol's murder. His death was ruled a suicide.
Some people would say because Knapp committed suicide that it was a conscious of guilt in reference to his participation in being the murderer of Carol. Unfortunately, he's not alive. We can't ask him that question.
2 weeks into the prosecution's case, there is a stunning development. Steve DeMocker's trial comes to an abrupt halt when Judge Thomas B. Lindberg collapses in his chambers from a brain tumor.
During the delay, DeMocker's girlfriend, Renee Girard, has a surprising change of heart and ends their 2-year relationship.
You know, I always wanted to believe that Steve had nothing to do with this. And I always felt conflicted about that, about whether he had done it or not.
Girard is having second thoughts about her boyfriend's behavior on the night of Carol's murder.
His break with routine, being out without a charged battery for his phone, being out without a flat tire kit to change his tire when he was the master of preparation for any outdoor adventure.
Thanks to new information from Renee, investigators literally unearth a crucial piece of evidence. What they say is a go bag stashed in a field outside Steve's house. Renee says he had packed it just in case he had a chance to make a run for it.
He was very constantly gripped with fear of being arrested. He was obsessed with plans to flee, saying, "I'm afraid I'm going to be arrested for a crime I didn't commit."
And then came more damaging information from Renee. Remember what DeMocker's attorney told us?
Was there a life insurance policy involved that he would have benefited from?
There also was a life insurance policy that he had no interest in and hasn't benefited from.
Well, not exactly. Renee told investigators that was a lie. Even though Steve DeMocker, charged with Carol's murder, could not directly receive the $750,000, he gave instructions to his daughters to transfer all of it to his defense attorneys.
Everybody along the way said, yes, it's okay to release this money to the girls. What they didn't know, what none of the officials knew, was that the money would be used for Steve's defense.
Based on this information from Renee, authorities reviewed Steve DeMocker's jailhouse phone calls.
You need to understand.
I am understanding.
It's not unreasonable.
Sweetie, you can't hold aside anything.
They learned that older daughter Katie, in fact, had argued with her father to save some of those funds for her younger sister Charlotte's education.
If it all needs to be used for defense, it all has to go to defense. My life is in the balance, and it's more important than Charlotte's college.
But Renee's biggest revelation is about an anonymous email that would have a dramatic impact on Steve DeMocker's defense when the trial finally resumes.
He called a few days before visitation and said that he had found out some information about how Carol had been killed.
During a jailhouse visit, Steve told Renee and his daughter Charlotte that a mystery voice he could hear through a vent in his cell told him who was really involved with Carol's murder.
What had the voice told him?
People were looking for Jim Knapp because Jim Knapp was involved in some kind of a prescription drug ring, and that these people were coming to look for him either to collect money or get something, and that they had gone into the house and encountered Carol instead of Jim Knapp.
Steve wrote down the details he had heard and showed his visitors this note. DeMocker then asked if one of them would drive 100 miles south to Phoenix to send an anonymous email with the new information to both the defense and the prosecution. We interviewed Steve DeMocker in prison by phone.
Why would you involve Charlotte then? That's just really baffling from a parent's standpoint.
As a parent, in retrospect, I am appalled that I did that. But I was terrified. We were terrified. All I can say is I was in jail, accused of a crime that someone else had committed. The police were bungling it.
DeMocker insists that he absolutely heard a voice in the vent telling him why Carol was killed.
Here come these accounts of Mr. Knapp's role in Carol's murder, and I don't know if they're true, but I certainly want them investigated.
Do you believe that he really heard a voice through the vent?
Yes.
You do?
Yeah, I think there was enough information there. That, I mean, I really have no, it's just more of a gut feeling. There's a lot of chatter that goes on in the jails, and for lots of different reasons.
Charlotte carried out her father's wishes, but when it's revealed that Steve DeMocker was behind the not-so-anonymous email sent by his daughter, a mistrial is declared on November 12, 2010. It would take another 3 years to get this case back in front of a jury.
I don't think anybody involved in this case could have anticipated all the twists and turns that this case has taken.
Five years and one mistrial later, Steve DeMocker remains behind bars, more than ready for his new day in court.
And he's kept a good attitude, he's kept hope.
With the new trial comes a new defense attorney, court-appointed Craig Williams.
They cannot put him in the house. And I felt good about that because I firmly believe he didn't kill her. And I felt that a reasonable jury would say, well, you can't put him in the house with this much blood?
For years, there was forensic evidence that seemed to strongly suggest there might be another suspect in the murder of Carol Kennedy. Remember that mystery DNA found under her fingernails? By the time the second trial begins, the state has finally determined it belongs to 68-year-old Ronald Berman. But how are Berman and Carol connected? Berman's autopsy was performed on the same day on the same table as Carol's.
The DNA under Carol's fingernails belonged to the person who they did an autopsy on an hour and a half before Carol's autopsy.
Are you kidding? Did they not wipe the table down afterwards? This is a homicide investigation.
The defense claims Carol's real killer may never be found because the crime scene was so badly compromised.
There's a photograph of the deputies standing down the hall and the dog is right there with them. They tromped through that crime scene without any care about what they're preserving. Why didn't they seal that whole thing off?
With no physical evidence to convict or exonerate Steve DeMocker.
That's what happens when you run out of money.
The prosecution points to his alleged motive, money. Emails between the former couple show they were still arguing over money, despite defense claims that the divorce had been settled.
Email on June 15th. I will not be pushed any further, Carol. You have extracted all you will extract from me. You get to start clean while I dig out of a staggering hole.
Carol's friend Jan Wheeler believes Steve was trying to solve his money problems by manipulating his ex-wife.
He would play these reeling in games with her. One of the very last conversations I had with Carol, she was just absolutely in tears. I mean, just sobbing. I was like, Carol, now what? And she said, now that the divorce is final, he has come to me last night and said, let's put this marriage back together.
And he just wouldn't go away.
Wouldn't go away.
Everyone is present. You may call your next witness.
Barb Onan.
Steve's attempts to insert himself back into Carol's life seem to be confirmed by yet another woman, his longtime business partner and lover, Barbara Onan. Onan testified that she spent the night with Steve in a Phoenix hotel room just 5 days before Carol's murder.
He was texting with Carol because Katie was flying out to Africa that day, and they were going to spend the day shopping.
That was news to you?
That was news to me. I felt as though I had been had one more time, been fooled one more time. That there they were, still back together.
It seemed like the theme of the second case was to dirty up Steve enough that jurors would believe that he could have killed her. They had to bring all of these things in that made him look like a bad guy.
He kind of was a bad guy, though.
Believe. But again, none of that. There's no violence in his history.
In the court of public opinion, people say, you know, he cheated on her an awful lot, and that speaks to their moral character. What do you have to say in response to that?
I guess all I can say is if every spouse who cheated wound up accused of murder, we'd have a problem. I regret the mistakes I made during my marriage, and it has nothing to do with any capacity for murder.
Did you ever see any violence?
No.
As she testifies at this second trial, daughter Charlotte suggests her mother was the one with a temper.
And did you ever see anybody throwing anything or doing anything like that?
I very vaguely remember my mom actually throwing something at him. I don't recall what it was. I think it was something heavy, but that was the only argument that there was ever anything physical.
DeMocker's attorneys insist that Carol's tenant, Jim Knapp, could be the killer, that he is the one with a history of intimidating women. An ex-girlfriend of Knapp's, Julie Corwin, testifies that she became afraid of Knapp after their breakup.
The last words in one of his emails was, quote unquote, you're not getting off that easy. It just left me hanging. I felt scared. I didn't know if he was going to come up and shoot me.
The evidence is way, way, way stronger against Jim Knapp than it is against Steve DeMocker.
This is a left-handed club.
Finally, after nearly $2 million spent in taxpayers' money, the jury is about to get the case.
That's what happened to Carol. Her skull was shattered like an eggshell. This is a beating murder by someone who had everything in the world to gain by getting rid of her.
Absence of evidence is not evidence. If you cannot put him at the scene, if you cannot make sure that you have DNA, blood, hair, something to tie Mr. DeMocker to the murder of Carol Kennedy, you got no case.
I know I wasn't at her house that night, and I'm innocent.
As the jury deliberates and the hours turn into days, it is now a waiting game. Kathy Ray and Tricia Greer were on the jury.
There were questions in the jury room. A couple of the jurors wanted to talk about alternate scenarios.
They just had to be convinced that there was nobody else because the girls had already lost so much.
After 3 days, on October 4, 2013, word of a verdict has family and friends returning to court. For Carol's mom, Ruth Kennedy, justice would be seeing her former son-in-law spend the rest of his life in prison. For Steve DeMocker's family, it would be seeing him walk free.
Division 1 is in session.
Has the jury reached verdicts in this case?
Yes, Your Honor.
Would you hand the verdict forms, please?
On the charge of first-degree murder, guilty.
Guilty. Steve DeMocker is convicted in the murder of his ex-wife, Carol Kennedy.
To hear the words guilty, I simply couldn't believe it. And then my thoughts went to the girls. And I'm like, oh my God, this is just, we thought this was going to be the end of the nightmare and it's just the beginning.
When they said guilty, Steve turned around and for a moment, we were looking right at each other.
What did you say to him?
We'll keep fighting.
We'll keep fighting.
We'll keep fighting.
To this day, Steve DeMocker says he is baffled at how he could be accused, let alone convicted, of killing his ex-wife.
If you did not kill her, sir, then why do you think you are in jail right now?
That's the million-dollar question. It was so difficult to imagine that 12 people could look at that evidence and come up with a verdict beyond a reasonable doubt.
The pieces of evidence that started to sway me was definitely the shoe prints, because that type of shoe was very rare. His phone was turned off, was very unusual for him. The scratches concerned me.
We heard about the internet searches that he had done on how to make a homicide look like a suicide.
Nowhere in the testimony did we see anything that would convince us that he was trying to write a book.
And if pointing the finger at Jim Knapp was supposed to raise reasonable doubt with the jurors,
I didn't know if he was going to come up and shoot me.
It didn't work.
We went through Mr. Knapp's timeline carefully, and we just could not make that work. Mr. Knapp did not kill Carol Kennedy.
On January 24th, 2014, Steve DeMocker is back in court for sentencing. The business suit is gone. This time, he's wearing the chains of a convicted killer.
If you want us to abandon Steve, you need to show us a drop of DNA in that house, a drop of Carol's blood anywhere on his body, his bike, his car, his home. A witness, a video, something, before we'll even begin to think that this is anything less than the conviction of an innocent man.
Steve DeMocker addresses the court for the first time and refuses to accept the jury's verdict.
I did not kill Carol. We loved each other for more than 20 years. And to believe me capable of violence against her, I would no more have harmed her than I would harm my daughters by taking her from them. I'd like to thank my family, and I'd like my daughters in particular to know how proud I am of the strength and the grace with which they have faced both the loss of their mother and the loss of their father. I love you both.
The girls' love for their father is evident. when they begged the judge for mercy.
So much of what I strongly value in myself, I learned from that man. This is the same man who sits here today accused of killing my mother. Frankly, the lack of facts and the lack of evidence in this case do not permit me the luxury of drawing such conclusions. You are faced with the question of whether or not to give my father the possibility of parole in 25 years. And I ask you that you do.
I ask that you not force the permanent loss of a second loved one, but rather allow us to look forward to a time when our pain may slightly diminish and when we may heal together again.
But the prosecutor will have none of it.
This defendant is a murdering, lying thief. No matter what anybody else is going to say about him here today, he deserves the maximum sentence.
As the judge announces the sentence, he has some harsh words for DeMocker.
The thing that I can't get by is this horrific crime scene. I saw these pictures, and I'm not sure I'm ever going to be able to erase those pictures from my mind. It was brutal murder. And from all appearances, the motive was money. The sentence I'm going to impose is natural life in prison.
Steve DeMocker will spend the rest of his life in prison with no chance of parole. For his two daughters, it is a double tragedy.
They've lost a lot, and they have just shown so much strength and grace through all of this. And they will do well just because of who they are.
As for me, I can promise that I will never forget the memory of my mother. She lives in me every day and will for the rest of my life. She loved people to a fault and saw the best in everyone always. She forgave easily, sometimes too easily. The world was a better place for the life that she shared with it, and I am a better person for having been loved and cared for by her.
Thank you.